Glenn, Claire, and I love alternate realities. You know, like the Marvel universe, the one filled with Captain America and Iron Man and, you know, all the superheroes battling villains and saving the world. We've seen all of the movies more times than I can count. And, you know, we're always tossing theories back and forth between each other. And it probably comes from our childhood. You know, Glenn and I grew up on Star Wars. You know, Glenn played lightsabers with sticks because they didn't have cool toys like that back then. And I had Princess Leia hair, you know, and we just, you know, just grew up on and all of that, you know, the light battling the dark side. And I mentioned in my first sermon here back in September, you know, my love for Harry Potter, you know, my favorite alternate universe. And that's something that I've, that love is something I've shared with Claire. We both have read the books many times. And so she'll spend time online reading fanfic theories. And so she'll come up to me and she'll say, so what do you think if the boa constrictor that Harry frees in chapter one of the first book winds up being the Horcrux that Voldemort makes in the last book? Which means nothing to any of you who are not Potterheads like us, right? One of the reasons that I love Star Wars and Harry Potter and one of the reasons why I think these stories actually still draw millions of people to them is because of the magic in them, right? Because in these alternate universes, magic is still possible. You know, because we live in this wonderful, modern, scientific, logical world that's been drained out of mystery and awe and wonderment. You know, we don't have that in our daily lives. Our ancestors did. You know, they believed in fairies and sprites and, you know, mystic saints and Irish springs that had healing properties, and, you know, saints you'd pray to and they would heal you or find your lost things or make some event, help some event come to pass. You know, even if you woke up and the day was winter but beautiful in the 50s or sleet and snow and ice was a mystery you woke up to. You know, as we've gained knowledge, we've lost the mystery and awe that used to make up the foundation of our days. And so today, we come to the last Sunday in Epiphany season, right before Lent, which is also the Feast of the Transfiguration. You know, which, if you're a Potter fan like me, might make you think of Professor McGonagall's Transfiguration class, in which you get to learn how to, you know, change something into another with a magic spell. Yeah. Yep. Thanks, Lauren. I planted her just for this reason. But transforming a tortoise into a teapot is not the transfiguration that happens in this morning's gospel story. You know, Jesus wasn't changed from one thing into another thing. Jesus becomes more of who he already is. He is revealed to be fully who he is. And today we hear this most incredible, you know, almost magical story of how Jesus is yet again revealed to be God's beloved Son, the fullness of all of God's glory. We're making our way through the gospel, through the Jesus story. We're balanced here between the baptism, when Jesus is first named as God's beloved Son, and the cross, where Jesus is revealed again to be God's Son. And on the road to Jerusalem, balance between baptism and the cross, Jesus Right after Peter confesses Jesus as the Messiah, Jesus then takes Peter and James and John, his inner circle, off on this this side trip. You know, I don't know why they go up the mountain at this point. I don't know if it's for prayer. I don't know if it's for some, you know, best friend alone time, kind of like a guy's weekend. But I think it has something to do with leaving the path of leaving the distractions of day-to-day living and getting into nature to hear God, to get closer to God more fully. And there on the mountain, Peter, John, and James witness this astounding sight of Jesus's whole being infused with light and his robes, which are, you know, dirty and dusty and maybe torn with all the travel he's doing around Galilee and Judea, they become whiter than snow. And Moses and Elijah, God's faithful messengers, who represent the law, as you know, we heard Will read today from Exodus, Moses being, no, he didn't. He didn't read. Cal did. Anyway, somebody read from Exodus, and Moses preparing the law, giving the law, and Elijah representing the whole prophetic tradition, they appear with Jesus. And for the disciples, it must have seemed as if heaven touched earth as they stood in that brightness on that mountain in wonder and awe. And Peter responds, you know, thank God we are here. It is good for us to be here, you know, here to witness the revelation of all that Jesus is, here to stand in that moment of glory. And Peter's comment of building dwellings, the Greek here means not something like a church or a shack, you know, not something big and concrete, but something more movable, something more impermanent, like almost like a tent, you know, something that would be built by Jews as they celebrated the Festival of Booths. Peter's remark isn't so much to, you know, let's start a construction project here, or let's make permanent Jesus's majesty here on the mountain. Instead, it's Peter's recognition of the miraculous that this moment was of Moses and Elijah and Jesus all coming together. And the Festival of Booths, or Sukkoth, as the Jewish people call it, that was a time once a year to remember the 40 years that the Israelites spent following Moses, living impermanently, living on completely dependent upon God. And it's a festival that happens in the fall, right, around harvest time. And so they would build these structures. We today would build them out of corn, right? That's what's in our fields at harvest time. We'd build them out of corn stalks. They would probably build them with wheat. This Festival of Booths, the prophet Zechariah says that's the moment when God will break into the world and bring God's kingdom. So Peter's comment, when he sees Jesus transformed with Moses and Elijah, you know, let's make these dwellings for you, really is an understanding of when he thinks God's reign is supposed to break in. So let's begin this festival. Let's begin this celebration. Let's begin the reign of God with the representatives of the law and prophet along with Jesus on that mountaintop. But the transfiguration isn't about power, but it's about purpose and praise. Jesus's purpose as God's beloved son and our praise to Jesus for the life he lived and the death he died so that we might live. Mark Twain once said, "You can't depend on your eyes when your imagination is out of focus." I think that this is why 2,000 years after Peter, James, and John witnessed the transfiguration, this is why we need this magical, mysterious story in our lives to celebrate it every year, to take a moment to reflect on God's glory. We need our imaginations to be refocused so that our eyes can truly see what's going on in the world about us. You know, Peter, James, and John, they were, you know, Jesus's closest friends, right? They were the closest of the 12 who were the closest of the hundreds that followed Jesus. And these three must have seen so many miracles. You know, they must have seen so many healings that Jesus did, and the lame dancing in the streets, and the hungry fed with just a loaf of bread and some fish. And yet even these three needed to have their imaginations refocused. You know, somehow along the way, I think, from seeing all of these miracles so much what Jesus was doing, that they got blind to it the way that we can. You know, oh yeah, here's another lame guy. I bet Jesus is going to make him walk. You know, they needed to have their imaginations refocused, woken up once again to the glory of God. You know, a lot of sermons are preached on transfiguration about the need for us to get down from the mountain, that the point of the transfiguration isn't to stay up at the top of the mountain and build, you know, churches and dwellings up there, but to get down into the world among the people. And I mean, that's true. We need to do that. But I think that sometimes it's really important for us to go up the mountain, to take that time to step away from distractions, to get to a place where the air is clear and bright, so we can just focus on God, on praising God, on God's purpose for us. You know, otherwise, all we're ever going to see is what our eyes want us to, without any influence from God. We need to have our imaginations refocused. It's one of the reasons why we come to church, isn't it? To experience that bit of glory, that bit of magic, the awe, the wonderment, the praise of God. Only the truly most amazing thing is that, unlike my love of, you know, alternate wizarding universes, God's glory is real. Heaven touching earth in moments that we can behold God's glory, be nourished by that, and be sent out into the world to be transformed into Christ's body. It's what happens every Sunday here around this table, where bread becomes flesh and wine becomes blood to nourish us to be Christ's body for the world around us. And like Peter, we can say, it is good that we are here.